Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during August evenings. But before taking our sky tour together, I'd be remiss not to mention the big deal happening on August 21st, a total eclipse of the sun. If you're standing somewhere in the central path, a ribbon about 70 miles wide that stretches from Oregon to the Carolinas, you'll see the moon completely cover the sun's disk for up to about 2.5 minutes. Meanwhile, everyone else in North America gets a partial solar eclipse that day. The closer you live to the path of totality, the bigger the moon's bite in the sun. For more on this wonderful event, including tips on how to photograph it and how to view it safely, go to skyandtelescope.com. This solar eclipse happens at new moon, and 2 weeks earlier, at the full moon on August 7th, the geometry flips around and a partial lunar eclipse occurs. It's not particularly deep, just a quarter of the moon's disk will be in Earth's shadow, and it won't be visible from the Americas. Mid-eclipse occurs at or after sunset, as seen from Europe and Africa, and it's a pre-dawn event on the 8th from Eastern Asia and Australia. So, besides these two eclipses, what else do the skies of August offer? Before you head out, grab a folding chair or one of those reclining loungers so you can lean back and look up without getting a sore neck. Take a long-sleeve shirt or light blanket, too, in case it gets cool, and find a spot that's far away from bright lights with a clear view all around the horizon. Don't know about you, but I can't imagine August without thinking about the annual Perseid meteor shower. This is the time when you'll see many more shooting stars than usual. The Perseids have a fairly sharp peak, which this year is forecast for about 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Saturday, August 12th. So the best time to look is later that evening and in the wee hours of Sunday, the 13th. Ordinarily, you might see at least one meteor per minute in the hours after midnight. But unfortunately, moonlight will spoil the show. The moon is a fat, waning gibbous disk that rises around 11 p.m. Now, some Perseids will appear earlier in the evening once the constellation of Perseus rises over the northeastern horizon. And if it's cloudy on August 12th, you can still see a few of them on the night before or afterward. For a long time, no one knew what the Perseids were. Some Catholics believed that these meteors were the burning tears of St. Lawrence, who was martyred in Rome on August 10th in the year 258. Fast forward to 1837, when a Connecticut bookstore clerk named Edward Herrick saw lots of meteors on the night of August 9th. Herrick later concluded that they occur every year on the same date. It turns out that John Locke, the headmaster of a girls' school in Cincinnati, had reached the same conclusion 3 years earlier. In any case, today we know that the Perseid meteors are bits of debris shed by a comet called Swift-Tuttle. Earth passes near the comet's orbit every August, and that's when tiny flecks, most the size of sand grains, slam into our atmosphere at 37 miles per second. All this happens quite high above us, about 60 miles up. Each incoming particle compresses the air in front of it like water piles up ahead of a speedboat, and this creates a white-hot shockwave along its path. The flash of light our eyes see is that brief but brilliant shockwave, not the particle itself burning up. Aside from the eclipses and the Perseids, there's still plenty to see in the nighttime sky. If you're up before dawn, you can't miss brilliant Venus, which rises at roughly 3 a.m. and stands well above the eastern horizon as the first rosy fingers of dawn creep up. Sadly, I am not the early riser I used to be, so let's head to the evening sky and concentrate on those stars instead. Note where the sun sets. That brilliant star to the upper left is the planet Jupiter. It's nearing the end of a long run across the evening sky that began back in April. Well to the left of Jupiter, about 6 times the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length, is another planet masquerading as a bright star. That's Saturn. If you've got a small telescope, you'll be able to resolve its beautiful rings. But even by eye, it's a lovely creamy white beacon in the evening sky. To the lower right of Saturn, a bit more than one clenched fist away, is the star Antares. It's a little dimmer than Saturn and has a slightly reddish color. Antares is the heart of Scorpius, whose head is marked by a vertical arc of 3 medium bright stars a little to the right. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, the closer you live to the equator, the higher up you'll see the scorpion in the sky. Those of you in southern states, like Texas and Florida, have much better views than I do way up here in Massachusetts. Shift your gaze to the left of Saturn by not quite two fists. You're looking for a group of 8 medium-bright stars in the shape of a teapot. The handle is on the left, and the spout, tipped down a bit, is on the right. Got it? The whole thing is about the size of your fist. From northern states and Europe, the teapot is only 1 or 2 fists above the horizon, so it helps if you look from a spot with a clear, unobstructed view toward the south. Now, when astronomers carved up the sky, they didn't call this the teapot constellation. Instead, you've found the main stars of Sagittarius, the Archer, and you're looking toward the center of our home galaxy. If you're lucky enough to live where the sky is really dark, or if you happen to be on vacation in a rural setting, you'll see what look like puffs of steam rising from the teapot's spout. Those puffs are the countless stars of the Milky Way, which continue upward until they arch overhead and clear across the summer sky. And if you're unlucky enough to live where light pollution is rampant, which is most of us, unfortunately, you can't see the Milky Way at all. In fact, ask yourself, have you ever seen the Milky Way in all its glory? If not, you really owe it to yourself to get under a clear, deep black sky this time of year to see all those stars arcing across the sky like a great river of light. It's a sight you won't soon forget. Now, do an about-face from the teapot so that you're facing roughly north. As evening twilight fades, you'll see the Big Dipper hanging from its handle about halfway up in the sky. At the end of the handle are 4 stars forming its bowl. Your outstretched fist will just cover the bowl. Draw an imaginary line through the bottom pair of stars and follow it up and to the right by about 3 fists until you reach a medium-bright star. That's the North Star, called Polaris, and you're now looking due north. Now, go back to the Big Dipper, and this time follow the arc of its handle to the left, until, 3 fists away, you come to a bright star perched high above Jupiter. That's Arcturus, the 4th brightest star in the nighttime sky. As stars go, this one isn't much bigger or brighter than our own sun, but it's relatively close by, just 37 light-years away. Arcturus is a Greek name meaning guardian of the bear, that is, the constellation Ursa Major, which includes the Big Dipper. Arcturus is also the alpha star in the constellation Boötes, the plowman. Let's say that one together, Boötes. Got it? It's from the Greek words for plow and ox. For more information about all kinds of stargazing, head to skyandtelescope.com. Next month, we'll go exploring in and around the Summer Triangle. Until then, I wish you clear skies.